Heidelberger Frühling Podcast. Heute mit
Leif Uwe Arnsnes.
Sie kommen aus Norwegen, sind Pianist und die beiden Vornamen, die Sie genannt haben, Leif, Ove, erinnern mich dran, dass Wikinger auch so geheißen haben. Haben Sie eine Verbindung vielleicht zu den Wikingern?
I guess we all have, but you're right that the place where I grew up, I'm actually not born in Karmøy, but I grew up there from the age of 4. This has become more and more, now we see a very important place for the Vikings, because they are discovering around my local church, which the church is from the 1200s, they're finding more and more treasures from the Viking time. So one has to rewrite the Norwegian history, in fact, because we see more and more that this was a very central place for the Vikings.
Das ist eine Insel, wo Sie aufgewachsen sind. War das eine Insel, wo Musik auch einen Platz hatte?
I am from childhood surrounded with amateur music life. In every way, choir, bands. I was myself playing the baritone, the euphonium, in a brass band. My father was a band conductor, but I was lucky also that both my parents played the piano. They are music teachers, so amateur musicians, but music teachers, and they both played the piano. And that was the reason I played the piano. And in my childhood, I had no friends around me that played the piano. And in fact, no professional musicians around me for a long time. So for me, it was a very foreign thought to become a pianist or something like that. But I just felt already from the age of 7, 8 that this was my space, this was my vocabulary, my language, how I could communicate with the world in a way.
So you finished school. Haben Sie dann die Schule aufgegeben, um nur noch Klavier zu studieren?
Yes, I was lucky to also have very competent teachers as a child, especially given the fact that I was from a province like this. But then when I was 15, I met my main teacher, Jiří Hlinka, who was a Czech from Prague, who had moved to Bergen in Norway in the 70s. And he said, well, when you're finished with your 9 years of school, you should immediately come to Bergen and start with me at the conservatory. Because these years, when you're 15, 16, 17, 18, they are the most important years for your development. So don't continue the normal school, you know. And this was a new thought for me and for my parents, but I followed his advice, and I'm very happy I did. I would say from I was 15, 16, then I really started working much more and with an intensity incredible with my new teacher. I think I felt, you know, at the age of 13, 14, that when I played for people in different circumstances, and I was doing some youth competitions and so on, and I got feedback from that, people were listening and I had something to say. So, and I was feeling myself that this is more important than anything in my life. So it didn't feel like a risk, it felt like necessity, really.
Spielt da auch eine Rolle, dass man eine Belohnung vom Publikum bekommt, wenn man gut spielt, wenn das Publikum einen mag? Ist das auch ein Antrieb, um das weiterzumachen, weil man immer wieder eine Bestätigung bekommt, ein Lob bekommt aus dem Saal?
I think the most important thing is the music itself. It's such a driving force in my life. It's something that I love so much, and I felt that from I was little, that to sit alone at the piano and to have this space for myself and my music, that is the most important. But of course, and I'm very happy that my parents let me play as a child always for people. It could be for the family or for small gatherings in the local surroundings. And I was being known, you know, as talent, so people asked me to play. And I'm very happy I did, because then also to get this feedback, to feel that you're sharing with others. This is important to, I think, to have this as a joy from your child. And I had this. And I remember when I started the conservatory when I was 16, I thought, why are everybody sitting just in their practice rooms the whole day and we are never playing for people? And then they are extremely nervous for their exam in the spring, because they have never played for people. And I still think to this day that this is something wrong. You know, we should play in schools, we should play in homes for elderly people, you know, wherever, just to get a more experience of sharing what we love. This is often somehow a mistake with classical music, because we are always searching for this perfection and it's never good enough. And then we think, okay, we just need to work more and more and more and then we will make a perfect exam. No, because you need the experience of sharing it. And that's why I always feel very nervous when I have to do a piece for the first time in front of a public. And it doesn't matter if it's a small Norwegian village or if it's in New York, it's the same. Because if I play a big Schubert sonata for the first time, something will happen in the meeting with a listening group. You can prepare yourself for everything, but the psychological meeting with an audience is something different. So I believe in this meeting at the same time as playing for myself will always be maybe the most important thing in life.
Ihr Programm in Heidelberg enthält unter anderem einen Zyklus von Antonín Dvořák, poetische Tongemälde, so etwa heißt er. Die einzelnen Titel dieser 12 Stücke, die da drin enthalten sind, klingen ganz harmlos. Da heißt eins Bauernballade, das andere heißt Koboldstanz. Aber Dvořák selber hat geschrieben, er kann sich kaum vorstellen, dass es einen Pianisten gibt, der den Mut hat, dieses ganze Stück hintereinander mit allen Einzelstücken zu spielen. Ist das so schwer?
I read this recently, this quote from Dvořák, and I thought, oh, that's exactly how I felt about this cycle, because I played a few of the pieces earlier on, even as a child. Yeah.
Separately. Okay.
I discovered these pieces because my parents actually had an LP at home with a Czech recording of it. So I've known these pieces from childhood and I've always loved them. And I think it's a great mystery for me why they are really not known outside the Czech Republic. This is really prime time Dvořák in the around the 8th symphony, second piano quartet, famous piano quintet. It has melodic inventions, so great. And what I love, you are mentioning these titles. There are also really everyday small things that he is describing in a very poetic way. I think there is a piece called, in Deutsch, Plauderei. Gibt das, yeah? Mm-hmm. Such a thing, I mean, small talk, you know? Mm-hmm. Just a picture of people talking together. And I find it so touching how he can often just come up with a very simple idea, very folk song-like, and then in the middle of the piece it changes character and he elevates it to something very poetic, sometimes very spiritual, sometimes very deep. So each of these simple ideas for each piece is becoming a big story. He has a very special talent for that. Extremely touching harmonies and characterization. I'm very excited about this. Also the fact that people don't know this big cycle of pieces by an important composer. And this is what can happen with piano repertoire, because we simply have so much that we don't know the piano repertoire of Antonín Dvořák.
Und es ist so lang wie eine Sinfonie eigentlich, wenn man alle Stücke zusammen spielt. Ein anderer Zyklus, den Sie spielen, der ist von Robert Schumann, Karneval, benannt. Mhm. Was hat Sie da zu bewogen, das ins Programm zu nehmen?
Bewogen.
Warum haben Sie das ins Programm genommen?
Well, where the Dvořák is maybe very intimate conversation with the listener and the music, I have a second half which is very theatrical. First with Bartók burlesques, and then I think that fits very well with the Schumann Carnival, which is a very well-known piece, and with good reason. It's an ingenious piece. And if you think about the time when this was created, this is not very long after Beethoven's death, in fact.
I think in 1837.
Yeah.
He published it.
Yeah. And this is such a new world. I mean, the kind of poetic references always to different figures from the theater, from literature. He's describing other composers, like the famous piece of Chopin or the Paganini, which is the most virtuosic piece in the whole cycle. How he wanted to combine the poetry, the stories, and the music, like a kind of Gesamtkunstwerk for piano, is really incredibly fascinating. And how it's alive, I mean, how the rhythms, how it's dancing, how every piece is restless, going from one character to other. It's an ever fascinating piece.
Sie haben ein Projekt abgeschlossen, das ist auch schon einige Zeit her. Man wird aber daran erinnert, weil wir jetzt ja Beethoven schon angefangen haben zu feiern. Der Geburtstag 2020 der 250. Sie haben ein Projekt mit Beethoven gemacht und haben eine Reise mit Beethoven gemacht. Und die Zahlen, die dabei zustande gekommen sind, sind fast erschreckend. Sie haben 230 Live-Auftritte gehabt innerhalb dieses Projekts in 108 Städten in 27 Ländern. Was haben Sie sich da angetan?
Well, I felt a need after about 40 years of playing many different composers all the time to go very deep into one composer, and the need for me was Beethoven, that I felt more and more the central place that he has for the piano and in my life and in my heart. So I decided between 2012 and 2015 to basically only play Beethoven's music. And the main project was the five piano concertos and the choral fantasy. It was a big collaboration with the Mahler Chamber Orchestra, but I also played with other orchestras. But I recorded and did many tours with the Mahler Chamber Orchestra.
You were the conductor, yeah. Also.
This was also a big decision, of course, that we decided to do it without a conductor, that I was leading from the keyboard, which was challenging. I had done a lot of Mozart and Haydn concertos in this way, a little bit Beethoven, but not so much. In the beginning, I found it tough because you really have to. Yeah, I mean, I'm not a conductor, but you have to give energy. I mean, you have to really conduct in a way when you have Beethoven, in addition to playing. So, and these are two different things. In something as symphonic as the Beethoven concertos, you really have to give the energy, you have to give the gestures, you have to give. And then after a while, what was fascinating with the project was that we got to know each other so well, and we had discussed so much the intentions of our performances and what we wanted with the music and the diversity of expression and everything. So I must say, the last tours we did, I experienced a kind of freedom and spontaneity in performances and a kind of consciousness that I've never experienced otherwise. And that's why, in fact, I very much wanted to do another project with them, and I'm starting now a Mozart journey, which we called Mozart Momentum, concentrating on 2 years of Mozart's life, 1785 and 86, where he wrote a phenomenal concertos between 20 and 24. And we are doing those and chamber music and solo music from the same years. So even if it's now the Beethoven anniversary, I am concentrating more on Mozart because I've already done my Beethoven celebration.
Is this auch mit dem Mahler Chamber Orchestra?
Yes, this is together with the Mahler Chamber Orchestra and going for the next 2-3 years. We are doing many tours and we are recording next year in Prague, in Rudolfinum, in the Great Hall. And it's interesting to take a specific period in time like we do with the Mozart Momentum, because you can also create, you know, you can play also music from other composers from these years together with Mozart and see exactly what makes Mozart great, what happened at that time.
Man stellt fest, dass Sie sehr ausgebucht sind. Sie spielen viele Konzerte, Sie haben viel zu tun auf dem Konzertpodium, haben aber einmal gesagt, wenn ein Pianist keine Familie hat, muss er trotzdem immer so spielen, als hätte er Familie. Das heißt, habe ich verstanden, sich selber nicht überfordern und zu sehen, dass es um ihn herum eben noch andere bedeutende Beschäftigungen gibt. Gehen Sie dem selber auch so nach?
I think what I meant by that was also to how you plan your life, because I remember we got our first child when I was 40 years old, and before that I had 10, 15 years behind me of basically traveling all the time. I mean, I was very restless. I didn't have a feeling of a home. I didn't have a route. I was living a little bit in Copenhagen, a little bit in Bergen, in Norway. Somebody asked me once, what advice do you give to young artists where it suddenly explodes? And I said, you know, try to plan your schedule like if you had a family, like if you need to take Urlaub in the summer or a little bit around. You need to plan these periods, otherwise you can be swallowed by this industry. And I see this quite a lot by people who don't have time for themselves to develop and to study, and they are being asked always to play new pieces. And it's a luxury situation, of course, for young artists too, and very exciting to be asked everywhere, but it's challenging.